Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show.
Today's guest is Fernando Honing, Principal AWS Cloud and DevOps Evangelist, and currently Principal Cloud Architect at Delta Host. I do think there's an art as well to actual meetings. Like, there's an art of how to actually run one and be effective during a meeting as well, isn't there? Like, you know, there's good and bad ways to run them, and I think.
Yeah, I think meeting preparation is one of the skills that you gain over the years, and depending how effective you want to be on your work is when you put more emphasis on trying to be more effective on that and use the time wisely. So
yeah, I agree. Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on anyway. You know, I'm looking forward to talking with you. There's a few things that, you know, I really actually, you know, want to get stuck in and talk to you about. You know, obviously, you know, your kind of expertise in cloud, you know, DevOps, this kind of area, like, I want to kind of get your thoughts on that space at the minute, as much as anything. But I also think that it might be just be kind of good to get, you know, kind of a little bit of your background. You know, how do you get in, end up, you know, in cloud and DevOps?
Yeah, well, this started when it was like 16, 17, before finishing the high school. And it was more like me going to end customer and installing like modems, you know, I'm talking about in, I don't know what, 1998, 1999 or so. So I've started like being like the support guy that was going to each customer and installing like modems and opening the towers, the PC towers, and doing that bit of hardware and software configuration. And then it was more like, oh yeah, I think this is something that I would like to do. So then I've started working as a support rep for another company, and that led to working with more like software agencies as a sysadmin. I've been always very much interested in open source technologies and things that probably no one else was doing, you know. So most people in that period of time was doing Windows and Windows NT or Windows Server, and I was more always interested on the dark side, so always trying to compile and do some Linux installations. So I've started my career as a Linux sysadmin, and then did a bit of DBA as well. And basically on about 2009, 2010, I had the opportunity to join Intel in Argentina. And we've started with all these multi-cloud or hybrid cloud between on-premises using OpenStack and AWS. You know, so it was like very good opportunity for me to start learning all these cloud technologies and how you were able to convert infrastructure into code and that code converting back into infrastructure. So yeah, that's kind of how I've started with cloud.
What is it that, you know, kind of compelled you to just continue with it and get to the level? Was it just the projects and kind of the application of the work that you were actually doing that was kind of motivating you to keep kind of pulling away?
I think the first motivation is helping other teams to achieve their goals, you know. So when you see how applications teams struggle to get things done on the infrastructure side, is something that motivates you to say, hey, hold on, I can help you to get this done. The only thing you have to do is just plan and operate in a way that is going to scale in the future. There is no point for you to do something manual and then on every sprint you need to redo it, you know. So and I think on that's where big enterprises are struggling at the moment, because the development teams are now more agiles and want to get their code into production as soon as possible. And there's a bit of a challenge for the all enterprise model where you have your network team, you have your infrastructure team, and you have your security team. And as that's not embedded into the different development cycles for your application. And that is a bit of a struggle for them.
Right. You know, so is it very much the kind of problem solving aspect then that, really, I guess, is what you're saying, not necessarily the outcomes as much?
It is about solving their challenges, and that's, I think, something that is really rewarding for someone who really enjoys achieving things. And when you come up out of the sprint and you see how much you help other teams to get to a place, I think it's something that at some point helps you drive conversations with other peers or other people in the industry. I mean, this is the way forward and how you can help your teams as well to success.
So obviously I want to talk a little bit about kind of, you know, AWS cloud DevOps as well. When you look at the kind of the direction that these technologies are going, you know, how much they've changed over the years since you've been kind of working on cloud-based projects, what have been some of the kind of the key kind of broader changes that you've seen happen in the space?
I think what one of the key aspects that changed in the past, let's say 5 years, is that cloud providers are more focused on getting developers on board. You know, I mean, for me, creating a virtual machine in VMware, vCloud, or in AWS is kind of the same thing. I mean, you're just moving your base infrastructure from one provider to another. The key things are how cloud providers are integrating all their services in a way they can interact with the code that a developer produces. So I think that is something that is, you can see how, you mean, the evolution on cloud services. You see more on the testing, on how the infrastructure can be tested and reprovisioned in about minutes. That is something that is changing, and me coming from an operations side of this business is something that we as a operations guys need to worry if we don't take the right direction. So for me, is always trying to keep up to date with the new services and how can you integrate that new service or new feature with the current ones. So that is something that happened and is happening more often right now. But how I see the next 2, 3, 4 years, I think it's going to be more on the serverless and probably the artificial intelligence and machine learning. So I think is the whole industry is going to move towards that. That is one of the things. So serverless and machine learning. The other thing is big data. I see a lot of services and products generating such an amount of data every day with things that you do that you don't even think about, all the data that you're producing on every minute, you know. Just to put it an example, I don't know if you know the Tesla cars. So essentially, Tesla, for every mile that you drive, they're gathering data for every road you use. At what speed are you going? And with all these sensors they've got, they can just have such an amount of data to understand how their users or the clients are using their cars, you know. So all of that needs to sit somewhere and needs to be processed and needs to be handled by a lot of infrastructure on the back. And do you think Tesla is worried about how many engineers do they need to hire to handle data? No, what they're worried is to get the right data engineers to understand the data, you know, not to where to put it. That is something trivial now. It's something that you just have an article and yes, this is how you put the data on a cube. The thing is, what can we do with the data? So the jobs are going to become more specialized and focus on specific workloads that the companies and the organizations need to get off that data.
Right. And what's applications and use of this technology for you are the most compelling, the most exciting, and things that you think are really going to enhance, you know, people's lives in some way? What kind of applications, examples can you foresee that are actually going to have the most compelling impact?
Oh, well, I mean, if you heard about Alexa and you know, all the Echo dots and the Google Home devices, that is something, you know, we didn't even think about that, like, I don't know, 5 years ago. And now if you have one of those at home, you can start interacting, and for some people that is alone at home, having that kind of interaction with someone who can respond to your words is very good, you know. There is a lot of people alone in their homes, and having that kind of interaction, I mean, if you talk to my parents or my grandparents, is something that they don't even understand, because they're used to just gather and all together and on a weekend and do something. With the type of life that we are living at the moment, some people cannot do it. So there are a lot of people who travel all the time, and wives and families just are alone at home. So that kind of, I think, interaction that you could have with these devices is a good thing. I mean, just not. I got a smart meter installed a couple of weeks ago, and it's such a good thing that you just go and check. Oh yeah, I've spent like 25p on today on gas or electricity. You know, something that you didn't have before, and I think everything is coming to a kind of an automation that you don't have to worry about just going and taking the meter reading, because it's been done all automatic.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's so exciting. I think that the ability to just save being busy in our lives is just such an exciting opportunity, isn't it? As we were just kind of talking about earlier, like how busy you get, like work, etc. Like, if some of these technologies can literally save you like hours in the week or even hours in the day, I mean, like that's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I think, I don't know, like the council organizations are just now getting this new way of working, and they just say, okay, what about if we put an application in our website, or we put an application in kind of a Alexa device, and people can just ask when is going to be my next collection day, you know? So that kind of things that you didn't think about that. Or what about having an app in your phone that allows you to get a parking space in central London, something like that? People just renting their own spaces for someone else to, I mean, all that kind of interaction in between people and applications is something that is helping people's lives.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, there's always concerns, isn't there, about adopting kind of new technologies. And I think probably a lot of the time it's slightly irrational, probably the fears, you know. I think when people think about these kind of new technologies, and especially automation, they think about kind of the loss of jobs. But are you kind of someone who thinks that it's almost an opportunity to create more opportunities as opposed to kind of losing opportunities for people?
Yes, indeed. I think when people is worried about losing jobs because of automation, is what they need to think is, what would happen if I learn how to code, or how can I handle these new systems with the knowledge that I already have? It's more about adapting everyone's lives into these new technologies. I mean, unfortunately, the way the technology is evolving right now is really, really challenging for some generations. And I think what we have to embrace and provide support as early adopters, because I think as people who's working every day on the cloud or with cloud technologies, we are early adopters on everything. So we just want to have our Echo at home. We just want to try the latest smart TV or smartphone. So is we need to help people to get this message about not worry about the application or the software. Just try to adapt yourself to a new way of living and how that is going to help you on your day to day.
When you obviously get involved in hiring or look at someone who would be a DevOps engineer or, you know, working on AWS projects or just cloud projects in general now, what is it about the talent that needs to be there in order to kind of have success in that particular area within technology?
One of the first things I look when doing interviews is how you evolve your career. In the last 5 to 6 years, how you were moving towards what I've explained before, like being close to a development life cycle, you know, so how you try to get with tooling with the latest tooling from, I don't know, like Terraform, CloudFormation, that kind of things, but also how you helped different development teams to create their own CI/CD pipelines and working with agile, like Kanban methodologies. So that's one of the key aspects. Another thing is how you evolve your own skills. So how, if you got like new certifications around cloud computing and at the end, like a base, I just want to work with someone who is willing to learn, willing to mentor junior staff. So that is the kind of three key pillars that I look when I do interviews.
Right. Is it as important to be really kind of niched on the skills that you have as a technical personnel? Or do you think that it's kind of that fundamental understanding and kind of more broader skill set that you kind of need to be a little bit more adaptable and agile in the workplace? Or, you know, is cloud kind of different in that, you know, you just need those kind of niche skills?
I don't think you need to lock yourself on a specific technology. As I said before, what you need to do is solve people's problem. So essentially, you're going to have like a need coming from your development teams or your infrastructure teams. So we need to do something. What tools do we have today that could help me to solve these problems? And then it's going to be more like a week, 2 week POC around that, and then you're going to be testing what products is the best for you. But the most important thing is to not lock yourself on a specific cloud provider, on a specific language, or just be as open as possible with different tooling that we have, because effectively we have a lot of tools, languages, and cloud providers to pick.
Right. Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting. Do you think, has that changed since when you first started getting into technology? Has that been kind of one of the big things that has changed from kind of your earlier days till now?
Yes, I think before you had like a stack, you know, you had like your Java stack or your PHP stack or your .NET stack. You know, you weren't able to mix and match. And I think these vendors realize that and they are now offering different capabilities in their offering. And now they say, oh yeah, an Oracle database to be more flexible and to be in the cloud, or I don't know, with SQL Server that now you can put it in the cloud as well, or Azure just bringing all their AD into the cloud as well. So I think they realized the need of evolve of evolution and evolve their products and services.
When you think about space that you're occupying, what is it for you that's kind of you feel at the moment is the most exciting, the most compelling projects that you're kind of working on specifically within kind of cloud and DevOps? And what do you hope to kind of continuously achieve from the work that you're doing right now?
Yeah, so I have to split this in two. The first thing is more around moving organizations from on-premises to at least the hybrid world, where they can leverage all the cloud capabilities. So they can just understand about high availability, about resiliency, about automatic patching and all of that. So for me, moving organizations in that direction is really a good opportunity. In the other hand, leveraging people's skills is and mentoring and helping actual people, you know, people that work every day with this and helping them to get cloud skills and change their mindsets around thinking on architectures that are going to fail. So architectures that at some point are going to fail. So they need to think about that. And in that sense, I'm doing a very good job on onboarding people from Latin America and Spain. Basically, I'm leading a Hispanic AWS user group, and we've got online meetups every month where we have discussions around different workloads and like webinars that we do. And that's a really good opportunity for me to keep helping people on that sense.
Right. Brilliant. I like that. I enjoyed everything that you said. I've actually taken a lot of notes. It's been really interesting to kind of hear your thoughts. I suppose it, on the closing side of things, I just want to say, you know, thanks for taking the time today. I genuinely enjoyed it. So, and thanks for kind of answering my questions, especially to a non-technical person in terms that I could actually understand. So thank you for that.
Oh no, thanks you, Andy, and I think it was such a pleasure to talk with you and express my thoughts around where I think the industry is going to go. And yeah, thank you very much for that.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.